by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Oh, welcome. Oh, thank you. I'm so tempted right now to do, top of the evening to you. Welcome to Connor Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill with great Matt Butler. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. But I just had to listen through 3.5-4 hours of that, so I'm not going to do that to you, man.
Well, see, you could do it, though, because it's not cultural appropriation.
Oh, that's right. No. The great John Curley is also very, very much the Irishman. Very much. Very much the Irishman.
Oh. Well, that's why you're both allowed to do it.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. We had so much fun today debating whether or not St. Patrick's cards, but as much sense as it makes, St. Patrick's Day was not created by the liquor industry to sell booze. Nope. That's the federal government's job with prohibition.
Well, every holiday is pretty much an excuse to sell booze, right?
Exactly. Jack Stein and I today were debating the value of St. Patrick's Day, and I actually had to stand up for my people, the Irish Americans. St. Patrick's Day didn't start in America. Actually, the first parade was in America. The first St. Patrick's Day parade in the world was in New York City. And St. Patrick's Day has since made its way to Ireland. I've been blessed to spend 6 different St. Patrick's Day in Ireland, in Dublin, Ireland specifically. And they celebrate it. They give it the same irreverence that we do here. I expected St. Patrick's Day in Dublin, Ireland to be this magical, beautiful thing. And it is. There's parades. There's, you know, marching bands and school kids and majorettes and the whole nine, just like every other parade, the police force, the firefighters. But in St. Patrick's Day in Dublin, it is a biggest debauchery fest I've ever seen in my life. I expected this reverent thing, and it really wasn't. The entirety of Ireland seems to descend on Dublin for the parade. So, I mean, I've been to Ireland half dozen times and seen most of the entire country. And St. Pat's in Dublin itself it's like Mardi Gras in New Orleans for that one day. And it's not all just a bunch of drunken hooligans. There's families and little kids and strollers, and everybody's got their green on and their the big fake bushy orange beards. It's as cheesy as you possibly can imagine in Dublin on St. Patrick's Day. The big green felt hats or shamrocks on springs that kind of bounce around, stuff like that. My least favorite day of all my trips to Ireland was St. Pat's. We would broadcast from the Jameson Distillery on St. Patrick's Day back to Seattle. That was why we were able to go as guests of Jameson Irish Whiskey. And they would fly us in when I was part of the Bob Rivers Show. I hope some of you may have even heard the broadcasts from Dublin. And initially, the first time I went by myself. Actually with our news person at the time. And we went and we kind of called back to the show while my host, Bob Rivers, and Joe, our producer, stayed home. And after a year of hearing me do without them, I convinced them to come along with. And the first year I did it in 3 days. They will literally fly you in, spend a day just taking you around and showing you the city, the sights of the city. You know, basic double-decker bus sightseeing tour, you know, a boat in the harbor and up the river, and then you broadcast from the distillery and then fly home. And after 1 year of that, I'm thinking, no. Let's expand our trip. Let's make it a week-long festival in Ireland. We can then experience more of Ireland, have more stories to tell on air to our audience in Seattle, meet people, gather stories, and have a better broadcast. And they liked the idea, the folks at Jameson, and didn't cost them an extra penny. I just had them book my trip 3 days early and then come home 3 days late or whatever, however it fell in the week of St. Pat's, where it was in the weekday, it was a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever. And when we go, we'd land in country and we drive to the as far as we could get in the island. First off, Ireland is very small. You can drive coast to coast from Dublin to Galway on the western coast in about 4 hours. The whole country, cross the whole country in 4 hours. And it's a series of little towns along the way. You cross the Shannon River about halfway across the country. Next thing you know, you're in Galway. And my wife and I went, like three times I took my wife, a couple times I went without my wife, and one time I went just by myself, like I said. And we would see the greatest things. We would visit old castles and, you know, stay at little towns at bed and breakfasts. And I'll never forget, we would rent a car, my wife and I, when we went, so we'd be able to see the countryside. Have you ever driven on the wrong side of the road, Matt? One of the most unnerving things about traveling to Ireland, and I've been on a bunch of cities. I've hadn't had a chance to drive in many countries. But Ireland, since we were making it like a personal vacation, I had the chance to drive. And you'd rent a car, and, you know, everything is on the wrong side. I mean, you can't get a stick shift. I tried once and couldn't even – I didn't even get out of the parking lot by renting a manual. Because when you learn to drive a stick, you shift with your right and you steer with your left. That's how you learn. Imagine trying to write your name with your wrong hand. When you're sitting on the wrong side of the car, the wheel's on the wrong side of the car, and you're trying to shift with your left hand while driving, I couldn't get it. And I felt unsafe trying it. So I went and got an automatic transmission, much easier. But it's still very unnerving to drive on the wrong side of the road. And when I was renting the car, the gentleman at the rental car place at the airport said, look, you know, do yourself a favor, get the insurance. I said, well, you know, he says, trust me, the roads here are very narrow. I mean, most of the roads in Ireland were built by the Romans. I mean, they were made for horse-drawn carriages. They weren't made for cars, let alone two lanes of traffic. And so, you know, he said, you're not used to the car, you're on the wrong side of the vehicle, and the roads are narrower than you think. Trust me, it's worth the insurance. Everybody gets the insurance because you will scrape against a wall. You'll hit into something. I said, okay, that's fine. I'll get the insurance. I trust your judgment. He said, and the spare mirrors in the glove box, or the, I forget what he called it. There was a name they had for glove box. I said, what do you mean the spare mirror? He goes, it's inevitable that you'll cut something too close, not knowing where the edge of your car in the wrong side. You'll take off the mirror. And when you do, when you take off the side mirror of the car, and you will take it off, there's a spare mirror in the glove box. You ever hang a tray on the window of your car? At pull up to a restaurant and they bring
in a drive-in, yes, like yes, a Sonic
yes,
or something.
Yes, yeah, and they bring it up and you roll up your window a few inches, they hang it on your glass, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, in the mirror is a side-view mirror with one of those, you know, U-shaped clips, and you put it in and roll the window up on it, and now you have, because it took me about 2 hours to shave the mirror off the side of the car. You know, you're driving down these roads on the wrong side, and it's the roads narrower than you think, and you're coming too close to everything, and you're just driving along, and all of a sudden, ding, you hear this bang, you look over, and the mirror is gone. Oh, okay, he was right. You pull over, and you get the spare mirror out. Glad you bought the insurance. Roll it up in the window, and there's your, okay, I've got a mirror again. I can see what's in the lane next to me now. And you drive around the country and it's beautiful.
Did you ever have the thing happen that they always try to depict in the movies and TV shows where you encounter a flock of sheep that are moving very slowly and blocking your path?
So many times. In fact, I wasn't going to tell this story, but since you bring it up, you're in the middle of usually Western was where the sheep I found more. Flocks of sheep to be on the roads, and they're moving through town. They're being shepherded by a man walking his sheep. And we rented a car, my wife and I, and we're going out to the western coast. You ever see the movie The Quiet Man, John Wayne, Maureen O'Hara?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. I wanted to see where it was filmed because that cottage that was filmed in is still there. That little town. It's a very touristy kind of thing to do. It's way out on the western coast. I mean, it's the western tip of Ireland, past Galway. Ireland is like a clock, okay? At 12 o'clock, about 1, is Belfast. At 3 o'clock is Dublin. At 6 o'clock is Cork, the largest port. Most of the ships that left to come to America during the Great Irish Famine left from Cork. The Spanish, when they invaded Ireland, they invaded Cork. and they crossbred with the Irish, that's where the term Black Irish comes from. It's from Irish-Spanish descent. At 9 o'clock is Galway. Now, the Titanic left from Galway. Or no, Belfast. Titanic left from Belfast. But Galway is also a major port. I mean, Galway's a major port. Cork is a major port. Belfast is a major port. Dublin's a major port. We're driving across to Galway. We go past. We're going to go up to the on the Connemara, which is the County Connemara. That's where the Quiet Man was filmed. And Melissa and I had spent the night at this beautiful bed and breakfast castle. I mean, a castle. You know, you spend a couple extra bucks, and instead of just getting a hotel somewhere in a little town or a small B&B, Airbnb, a bed and breakfast at a castle. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Ballynahinch was this estate, this castle, right? And we're going to stay a couple nights at Ballynahinch. And we take a day trip the next day, and we're going to go out to the shores of, I think it's called Roundstone, the little town out there. And I'm driving along. It's beautiful countryside. It's everything you imagine with the stone walls, you know, in the fields or the property separated by. You know why the walls are made of stone, right? Because that's how, when they clear the fields so they can farm the fields. All those stones are made into walls. That's the border designation of properties are those stone walls. And I turn a corner and hit a sheep at about 50 miles an hour. And it exploded. Full of grass and all gassed up. And this thing, I mean, green slime covered the passenger side, which would have been the driver's side for us, but the passenger side of my rental car. My wife is freaking out. I mean, freaking out. And there's an old gentleman there, and I've just hit his sheep, one of his sheep, and killed it because his sheep were on the road. Now, you know, I slide to a stop. I mean, I wasn't going that fast, but I was turning a blind corner and just banged the sheep. I had no idea what the hell was going on. And this green ooze covered the car, right across the passenger windshield. And I said, my wife is just going nuts. She's screaming. Pulled over, and this old gentleman's there. And I'm like, what can I do? How can I make this up? You know, can I pay you? Oh, it happens here. So about it. And so don't trouble yourself. It happens all the time. You know, so it's like, you know, but what is the sheep? Because I couldn't tell you what the sheep. I don't know what the sheep's going. And we start talking. This guy, I said, well, let's figure out what to do here. And he goes, there's a small town, just about two kilometers. Stop there, there's a pub there. Come in there, I'll meet you in there. And so my wife and I stop, and my wife's calming down. And we're having a little bit of lunch, and this older gentleman comes in. And I start talking to him, and he's like, don't you? And he thought I was just distraught. And he's like, don't worry about it. It's the top, and it happens all the time. I start to talk to him. And I don't know if you've ever seen like a flock of sheep, but they've all got like different colors on their hindquarters, or some of them have splotches of paint on their hindquarters, right? They'll be, and they're like a neon green or like a neon purple or a neon red, like an orangish red. And I said to him, what is with the sheep? Is that how you know whose sheep is what? He said, no, that's how we know when they've been impregnated. I'm saying, how do you spray them different colors? He goes, no, they strap a bladder under a ram, okay? And they'll change the colors like on a weekly basis. And when the ram mounts the female, he leaves paint on her hindquarters so a shepherd can look at an entire flock of sheep and tell when that sheep was impregnated. He was saying, we can tell that one, because that one there's, she'll be doing about 3 weeks. The one across with the blue on it, she's going to be doing about 7 weeks. And he could tell you exactly what sheep had been, you know, inseminated and when they would be due. And I'm talking to this guy, and he's telling me all these stories about sheep herding. And I'm like, I really want to do something. He said, no, don't worry about it. And I said, well, you know, listen, would you be willing to come to Dublin on St. Patrick's Day as my guest? And, you know, would you be on the radio? And he did. He came to Dublin and was on our radio show where we broadcast back to the United States. And he was telling everybody about how I killed his sheep with a rental car. And he told the story about how, you know, all about sheep. It was about sheep herding and being a shepherd, being a sheep farmer. Anyway, I have run into flocks of sheep, Matt.
Literally.
It's funny that the castle that we stayed at, Ballynahinch, they put us up in the presidential suite. not because we were welded to, you know, we were in high rollers. We checked in the night before, late at night, arrived in Dublin, drove across the country, got out in the boonies to Ballynahinch, checked in that evening, my wife and I had a late supper, and went to bed. The next morning at 6 o'clock, they're running an excavator, like a backhoe, right outside the window of our room. I mean, literally, on the other side of the wall where my pillow is, they're digging up the foundation. And I went to the manager of this bed and breakfast, and I said, listen, I don't mean to be, you know, ungrateful, but my wife and I, we flew all day, we drove all day, we trying to get some sleep in this thing. He said, well, I'm sorry about that. Let us move you to a different room, away from the excavation, so you won't have to hear that. Because we're going to be there for a couple days. Gives us the key. Top of the stairs, go up and go far into the hall. And I go up there, and it's the presidential suite at the Ballynahinch, you know, castle. It is literally five rooms, two bedrooms, a dining room, a living room, a full service kitchen. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And I've never seen anything so gracious and beautiful in my life. It's overlooking a lake. It's a world-class trout lake. They lend you gear to go trout fly fishing out on the lake. There's a picture on the wall of President John F. Kennedy sitting at the desk in this suite. You know, John F. Kennedy and Jackie Onassis Kennedy stayed in this suite at Ballynahinch. And I go in the air. I said, I relieve myself on the same toilet as President John Kennedy. I've shite.
You have lived, my friend.
I have lived. I'm thinking, you know, I'm sitting there going, wow, where presidents have gone before.
Indeed.
You know, yeah, I loved Ireland. I thought about expatting. I thought about, you know, what if I ever could live anywhere else, it would be in Ireland. We had the best times, the best times in Ireland. It's Cairo Nights. Hope you guys had a great St. Patrick's Day. When we come back, well, let's find out why there is a St. Patrick's Day. Let's see if it's valuable to people still. I'm sorry to take it down memory road. And I'll tell you about the time my wife almost jumped out of a moving car. Not even hitting the sheet. This was worse. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. This is shipping up to Boston. Yeah, buddy. I misspoke. I said the roads in Ireland were built by the Romans. They were built in the era of Roman dominance. The Roman Empire never reached Ireland. They were Druids then. England, though, did invade Ireland. Don't get me started on why the Irish hate the English. It's not just the Irish, the Catholic and the Protestants. Ireland was part of the British Empire until the Irish Revolution in 1916. And during the time when Ireland was occupied and part of the British Empire, the Brits pretty much shaved the island clean. Ireland used to be mostly forested, the majority of the island, but it was all the wood was harvested, and most of the things built in England were built with wood from Ireland. The Irish were constantly enslaved, captured and enslaved to work in England as slaves. During the Great Potato Famine, there was a blight, a potato blight, that wiped out like 80% of the Irish potato crop. Now, wouldn't have been a problem because there's plenty of other things to eat in the nation on the island. Except that when the British owned everything in Ireland and the Irish were basically subservient to England, there was plenty of food. There was plenty of wheat, but it was English wheat. The Irish weren't allowed to eat that. They were forced to sustain themselves on whatever game they could find on their small pieces of land and potatoes. So when the potato blight happened and there was no food, there were fish in the streams, but those were English fish. And there were, you know, deer, elk, whatever, on the land, but that was English elk. There was wheat in the fields, but it was English wheat. So 3 million people starved to death during the Great Potato Famine. 3 million people emigrated from Ireland, mostly to America, and 3 million people survived. The island went from 9 million Irish to 3 million Irish during the time of the Potato Famine. And that's one of the main reasons that the Irish still, to this day, hate the British. Somebody asked me on the text line, you know, what Roman roads? No, they weren't. Right, they weren't Roman roads. They were built in the time of the Roman Empire. But the roads there are very, very narrow. They're very, very old. We were driving once, my wife and I, am on the wrong side of the road, going down this little country. I mean, picturesque, Matt, picturesque country lane. On one side is a hedgerow. You know, the impenetrable wall of...
Was there a bustle and said hedgerow?
There was a bustle and said hedgerow. Don't be alarmed. There's a hedgerow on one side of the road, and literally there's the hedgerow and the edge of the road with a yellow line, two very narrow lanes, and at this particular point of the road on the other side was a stone wall built like in the 11th century, and two roads, or two lanes through this wall, basically, of a stone wall on one side and a hedgerow on the other. We turn the corner to this huge truck that took up both lanes that was coming at us with a yellow light flashing above the cab. And this, I mean, like imagine a massive dump truck with a crane on the back. And it was coming nice and slow, but up both lanes. So we, my wife and I, in this rental car on the wrong side of the road, were forced to back up because there was nowhere to pull out. And we had to back up. It felt like an hour and a half. I venture to guess it was less than a mile. But, you know, my wife is literally in tears. She's so, you know, afraid right now. I'm looking over my shoulder. Luckily, I moved to what would have been the right side of the road for us, the right side of the road. Because if a car had come around the corner, it would, you know, I'm backing up in the lane he'd be using. You see what I'm saying? So I'm backing up while this truck is like filling our entire windshield. Is this truck who's driving and slowed down so I could back up. And I had to back up almost a mile before I could find a turnoff or road to pull into and let this truck go past so I could then resume my road and go on out to the town we were going to go see on the coast and the place where they laid the transatlantic telegraph cable from that town in Ireland all the way across the Atlantic to New York City. They had a big monument there where, you know, the little Irish towns were the greatest, and driving was a nightmare, and I wouldn't have traded it for the world. Oh, someone asked, well, what color, Mr. O'Neill, what color should we be? What was the original color used to celebrate St. Patrick's Day? Was it green or was it orange? It was neither. It was blue. The original St. Patrick's Day was blue because the original depiction of St. Patrick, he was in a blue robe. We wear green because green is the Emerald Isle, the color of Ireland. You know, orange represents the Roman Catholics. Green represents the Roman Catholics of Ireland. Orange represents the Protestants of Ireland. That's the tricolor flag. It's the green for the Catholics, the orange for the Protestants, and the white for the peace between the two. That's the three colors of the Irish tricolor, they call their flag, the tricolor. Anyway, enough about Ireland. Is that enough about Ireland, you think? Yeah.
Oh, no. Go on. Do go on.
I remember one night. We were in Ireland for the Jameson Global broadcast, right? You go to Ireland and you want to see all things Irish, and the Jameson Distillery has since moved to Cork, where all the global supply of Jameson is a massive distillery in Cork, distillery and distribution. The original distillery is in Dublin, a place called Bow Street, north of the river, and that's where the festivities and the broadcast was. The old distillery on Bow Street in Dublin. And they've got lots. It's the opening night party, right? Everybody just got in there from 36 countries around the world. They brought disc jockeys in from all over America, from Finland, from, you know, France, from England, from Argentina, you name it, from Norway. People there from all over the world to broadcast from St. Pat's, from Dublin on St. Pat's. But they got these modern bands, and they're good. They're young up and coming Irish bands, but they're. They're not playing traditional or trad music, they call it, traditional deedly 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 music, right? So me and Mike Jones was my producer then, and Casey Aitchison was our news person. The three of us were at this party, and we left because we wanted to find some Wanted to go have a pint of Guinness, not drink Jameson all night. Wanted to go have a pint of Guinness and find some old music. And it's raining outside, so we walk out of the old distillery, walk across the river, across the bridge, go to this old hotel, and we walk inside, and there's nobody in this bar. I mean, nobody. And just the three of us, because it's a rainy night. You know, it's two nights before St. Pat's. And we go to the bartender, you know, hey, we ordered three Guinness, and we had to do that away from the folks from Jameson because, you know, they didn't bring us there to drink Guinness. So Mike and Casey and I say, you know, three Guinness, please. And I said, hey, is there someplace close by we can see some traditional music, some trad music? He's like, you're kidding, right? We're like, no, seriously, we'd love, is there a pub close by you could recommend where there'd be live music playing? He points across the bar. He goes, see that door? I'm like, yeah. He goes, go through that door. We're like, seriously? He goes, yeah, just, and he goes, yeah. And we're like, well, can we take these with us? He's like, oh, yeah, it's part of the hotel. It was like the street level of the hotel. We had this bar. We walk over, and there was like, we noticed there was one guy sitting at a table in the corner we hadn't noticed before. The three of us walk over and open this door, and this wall of sound. I mean, through that door, and this building was so old, the walls were like 3 foot thick. You couldn't hear anything. Couldn't hear a sound. But we opened that door, and it was the sea of humanity. I mean, it was elbow to elbow. Every table was full. Every square inch was full. Every inch of the bar was full. In the corner was five guys playing, you know, guitar, a mandolin, tin whistle, Bowron drum. I mean, they're just going, and they're going for it. And it was the most raucous party I've ever seen in my life. And we walked in there and we started drinking with these people and met total strangers and made friends and listened to this music. But you couldn't hear a thing. The wall was so thick. And you open that door and it's just a party. And like little kids are in the bar with whole families are sitting at tables. You know, you mean huge corner tables, 20 people doing this. And just had the time of our lives. A rainy night. Woo! Ah, the Water Boys. Fisherman's Blues. I love this song. St. Patrick drove the snakes from Ireland, a metaphor for bringing Christianity to the Druids of Ireland. It was a Druid nation. That was the religion. The pagans, the Druids. And St. Patrick brought the Irish Christianity. The shamrock is because he used that flower, the national flower of Ireland, the shamrock, to show the three elements of the Holy Trinity. The Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. Oh, happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. I'm Spike O'Neill. James Matthew Michael O'Neill, if you must know my full name. Woo! I hope you guys are having fun tonight. Hope you don't mind all the reminiscing.
And the great songs.
Yeah, nicely done, Matthew. I stalked Bono once. I know exactly where his house is. I know exactly how tall the wall is around his house. I'll tell you how to find it if you're ever in Dublin. It's Cover Nights. We'll be right back. Last Irish story, I promise you. So the other best night of my life in a hotel was spent in downtown Dublin. There's a hotel right on the River Liffey called the Clarence. It's a very old hotel, over 150 years old. It was bought by Bono and The Edge when they first got some money in their pockets. They refurbished this beautiful hotel. The folks at Jameson put us up in that hotel, all the disc jockeys. And they put me up in a room. There's the riverside of the hotel, and the other side is what's called Temple Bar. It's like our Pioneer Square, all the bar districts of Dublin. So I'm in my room trying to get some sleep, and I nothing but and a nonstop party. It's the week of St. Patrick's Day. When the bars finally close at 3 a.m., here come the keg trucks. Bang, bang, and just emptying all the empty kegs and loading up the bars for the next day. I went to the manager next morning and said, I can't sleep in that room. I've got to get some sleep. I've got to broadcast. That's why we're here. We're here to work. I'm not, you know. He said, I've only got one room left. I'm happy, Mr. O'Neill. I'm happy to move to that room. No problem. He gives me the key and says, top floor. And I go up the top floor. And I said, which room? He goes, you'll find it. Top floor is only one room. It's the penthouse of their hotel. It's five rooms that run the length of the hotel, all with a penthouse. And that's the room he put my wife and I in. Had a balcony that stretched the length of the hotel overlooking the river in downtown Dublin. It was magic. I mean, I stole the key. It was before we had key cards. It was an old metal key on a leather fob. I've still got it at home today. But that's not my stalking Bono story. They would take us on sightseeing trips around Dublin, so we'd have stuff to talk about, right? We go on this tour by bus, and there's a great tour guide telling us all the history of Ireland and the various things. The Vikings invaded Ireland, the British invaded Ireland, the Spanish invaded Ireland, but we're still here. The Irish are still here. Fortitude. And we're driving south of the city, a little town called Dalkey. And we stop and he goes, we've been a while, let's have a drink. Let's go in. I'm buying everybody Jameson. They go into this little pub. And said, we're all inside this pub. And the guy says, folks, I want to tell you, this is a pretty special pub because this is the pub. Everyone has a neighborhood pub. That's their neighborhood. And that's their pub. He goes, you can see this pub's favorite son is behind the, there's a picture of Bono sitting at that bar. This pub is in his neighborhood. Like, this is Bono's pub. This is his neighborhood pub. When he's not on tour, he's just a regular bloke. And he comes into this pub. He goes, now hop back into the bus. I'll show you where Bono's house is. And we pull into this seaside community that's big, big estate houses. You ever heard of Enya, the name? Sail Away, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's got the biggest house. She's made more money than you two at this point anyway. She'd make more, you know. And we go down the hillside, and we come up with this long wall, this old, old wall. And behind us is this very old Victorian-looking estate. And we start to slow down. He goes, coming up on your right here, look out the bus windows. This wall, this is the wall around Bono's home. You know, and as we come up, you'll see the gates of the, it's a gated home. You'll know because on the gates, the iron gates of this estate, there are pieces of brass that are lyrics sheets. They are recreations of original lyric sheets in Bono's handwriting that have been recreated in brass that are on the gate in Bono's handwriting had been recreated. That's how he's adorned the gates of his home. You'll also know because there's always a bunch of high school girls sitting across the road with holding signs and flowers waiting to meet their hero. And as we pull down the street, you can see a dozen little high school girls sitting on the side of the road, right? And as the bus slows down and looks up, because you'll catch just a glimpse of the house better as we pull up to the gates. And as we're pulling up to the gates have opened and a brown Mercedes is rolling down the driveway. And it's Bono sitting in this Mercedes. And I'm like, stop the bus. I'm like freaking out. Stop the bus. And the guy's like, no. We respect our citizens. We respect our stars even more. We're not going to stop. And Bono's about to say hello to all these little high school girls. And I can't meet one of my heroes. And the bus rolled on down to the shore. So the next day I took our rental car, went back and waited 4 hours outside of Bono's house. And nobody ever came out of the gate. I was so mad.
Ah, your dream, Spike.
But I could bring up Google Earth and show you exactly where that house is. He'd do the same for his heroes. I know he would. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill, along with Matt Butler and the Cranberries. Oh, I missed Dolores O'Riordan. What a loss. I know there's other things in the world to talk about, things that matter in our community.
But it's Friday, and it's a special day. Let's not get too heavy.
We'll be right back.